You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. What's up, my kindreds out there? You know that we can't listen. Over the weekend, I got all of these, not all of these, but some text messages from friends afar. And they were like, what's going on there in the country? What are you guys doing? I'm like, all I could think of is Amy Winehouse's song. She said, what kind of a fucker is this? Have we not done this before? Scrolling. Because I don't know, but all I know is that change was necessary. Change is necessary. And as anybody knows that's lived longer than 25 years old, it often comes as a surprise without warning, and it's never pretty. So, you know, I would just say grab yourself, buckle in, and do your thing. And, you know, just take care of your own castle. If we're taking care of our own castles and our own lands, then, you know, we don't really have a lot of time to worry about too much going on other than the laws of the land, which we're going to talk about today. We have a very special guest in the house. Local shout out to PPAGLA, which I'm a proud member of, the Professional Photographers Association of Los Angeles. I've been a member a very long time. They always take care of me. They're always encouraging to me, telling me that they watch the show, and I tell them I'd give them a shout out. And then now for our announcement for our our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist of Coldwell Banker. His number is 818-571-1508. Again, 818-571-1508, Kevin Pike. So today for our guests, guess who we're going to have? Somebody very special. We've been talking about our sponsor. We've been running our sponsor's ad before I bring on guest. And today we actually have our sponsor as our guest. So welcome to the stage, to the screen, Kevin Pike. Hey, Kevin. Kevin is always busy.
Hey, guys.
We were really happy that I could pin him down at least for 50 minutes or so and let him talk to us about what the what kind of fuckery is this going on with real estate, all the new regulations, all of the new laws of the land. How are they affecting taxpayers, home dwellers, home buyers, real estate searchers, the elderly, people that have been left inheritances? What's going on? Let us know.
Well, there's so much going on. Where do you start? There's so many topics to cover, from that lawsuit governing buyers' commissions, which is kind of ridiculous. It was a frivolous lawsuit which should never have been filed to begin with, but that's another story. We were operating in a system that had been good for over 100 years and entirely transparent, entirely negotiable. And some attorneys had to stick their hands in the pot and make money off it, and to the detriment of both buyers and sellers. And it's really unfortunate. But the good news is, outside of more paperwork that we all have to do, not much has changed at all. Buyers really still don't have to pay for commissions, even though the media has led everyone to believe that now buyers have to pay for commissions. But sellers realize that that would hamper the whole market, because right now, if you're to buy a home, it's hard enough buying a home with interest rates being what they are and prices what they are. Not many people can afford properties. And so they're realizing that if they want to sell their property, they really have to bite the bullet and cover the commissions. So like 98% or 99% of sellers are still paying the commissions. Nothing has changed at all. We just have more paperwork to fill out. And the only people benefiting are the attorneys.
What are the commissions? What do you mean by the commissions for people that don't know the language?
Okay, well, you know, when I sell a home, when anyone sells a home, there's commission that you pay the realtor. Generally, that has come from the seller. It generally ranges from 5 to 7% on average. And people were complaining that was so high. So, of course, attorneys sued the National Association of Realtors. But the funny thing is, that wrong thing is, these attorneys, they make 30% commission. Who are they to complain about our little 5 to 7%, you know? It's so ironic. But in any case, all that has changed is that we have more paperwork to fill out. No big deal. It's just some paperwork. But still, the sellers are still realizing unless they offer the commission to the buyer agent, their homes are not going to sell as quickly. And when they do sell, they'll sell for less money. So they're not stupid, but they want to maximize their sale price. So they know they have to pay, if not all of, at least the vast majority of this, of the buyer agent commission. What it was basically, for those who are not familiar, is that there's a lawsuit that that came about, and through the lawsuit, we cannot advertise on the MLS buyer agent commission, and that has to be paid for by the buyer. In fact, it doesn't have to be paid for the buyer, but it's an option. So basically, it scared a lot of buyers, especially first-time buyers, who thought they had to pay commission to their agent as well. And so many buyers were forced to go on their own and not hire an agent like myself to represent them. Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible mistake, because then they're on their own without the knowledge they need to negotiate and get the best price. So oftentimes, they'll end up paying way more than they need to, and not do the proper inspections properly. And us as agents, we really work for our commission, because we're there to safeguard the interests of our clients, whether buyers or sellers. We're there to maximize, you know, the sale price when it comes to a sale, and to minimize the price when it comes to the buyer, and also to safeguard them regarding the inspections and go through everything and make sure nothing falls through the cracks. So when they move into the property, they're not regretful of their purchase. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Wow, that's a lot to absorb, and it's informational at the same time. When you say, are there contracts or stipulations provided before a buyer or a seller gets into the situation where they're in negotiation to actually go ahead and do the transaction?
Excellent question. There is now. There used to not be one, but there is one that's required by the California state. It's called a buyer broker commission form, BRBC. And all that states is that I, as your realtor, will enter into a contract with you as the buyer to be exclusive. So it reserves my time to serve you as the buyer. And it also caps the commission, how much potentially you'll owe me. So, for instance, we might state 2.5% on this form. So legally, technically, if a seller is not willing to pay that 2.5%, that is going to be paid for by you at close of escrow. However, what stands out for me is that I never charge my buyers that. We do have to sign that agreement, because it's by law we are required to. But I've never required a buyer of mine to pay my commission, because I've been able to negotiate with the seller to pay it for my buyer. And I've always been able to do that. So even though, yes, we do have to enter that contract, I have not once requested a buyer to pay that. Mm-hmm. And I work with so many buyers, even if the seller ended up not being willing to pay, if I'm not able to negotiate the seller to pay for it, I won't receive a commission. Mm-hmm. But I've always been able to negotiate with the seller. Most of the time, to be honest, they're already offering to pay for it anyway, because they know unless they offer to pay the buyer agent commission, many fewer people will come to see their property, which will result in a lower sale price. So it behooves them not to offer a small percentage to the buyer agent. So nothing has really changed. It's just the paperwork has changed, and more attorneys have gotten richer. But in truth, nothing much has changed, except that the state of California now requires us to complete the silly form, which we need to I need to sit down with the buyer and go over it in detail and explain to them, yes, we have to put 2.5% down on this form, but I've never forced my buyer to pay that 2.5%. And so it's kind of a waste of energy, but it's something we have to do by state law.
Well, with crypto, the decline of the dollar in some ways, things like that, are we encouraged with the state of affairs presently? Are we encouraged to buy homes, to not to buy homes, to move overseas? You know, what are we encouraging people to do to feel like we still live in a safe place, that things aren't going to be pulled from under our feet any day or any time?
Well, luckily, we all live locally, and locally, it's never good to make any drastic change. And it depends how old you are, too. It depends. There are so many variables. Because in the long run, what's happening currently in politics, it's a fluke, I believe. And I think at the end, truth always wins out. And, you know, for the next 2, 3 years, 4 years, whatever, we may see an increase in inflation. We may see an increase in interest rates, possibly. But it really, the only people that affects really are flippers. People who are looking to buy property, invest in properties to flip them in 6 months. But if you're a young couple looking to buy the first home or looking to move up to a larger home, if you're going to be there for at least 5 years or so, it's like the stock market. It's never a good idea to time the stock market. Just go in. You need to buy a place for quality of life, for your own needs. Go ahead and do it. And, you know, when you use a realtor like myself to be able to negotiate the sale, you'll come out further ahead. And in the long term, even if it fluctuates, prices might go down, they may go up. You know, over 5, 10 years, you can see prices go up. There's never a guarantee, mm-hmm. but in a long trend, real estate has almost always gone straight up. So I feel it's the best form of investment, better than gold, better than stocks, because people need a place to live. There's always value in the property, in the land itself. And in the long term, even if there's a crash in the real estate market, it's in the past just been temporary, and then it rebounds and shoots even further higher. So as long as you're not looking in the short term of 3 to 5 years of flipping it quickly, you're fine. Just find a place you love and enjoy it. As long as you can afford the monthly payments and can afford it. And that's where I come in. I sit down with you and we go over the numbers and make it work for you. Whether you're a first-time buyer or whether you're looking to downsize after retiring, where the case may be, it depends what your immediate needs are and long-term needs are. And go by those and don't try to time the market to save a couple thousand here and there. It just does not pay. It doesn't pay off. Think about what your needs are currently and just be smart about your purchase.
Well, what about, remember when a couple of weeks ago, the Dow like dropped down like to something like unbelievably low? If you were in the middle of purchasing or selling and something like that happens, how does that affect the situation for the buyer and the seller? And then the property in itself, how does that affect it when the Dow drops like that?
Well, the Dow always goes up and goes down, and you hear crazy things coming from Washington, and it could drop, you know, 500, 600 points in a day. That has very little effect on any transaction that's currently taking place. My advice, ignore it and move on and close your escrow and move into the home of your dreams and not worry about that. Mm-hmm. How could have effect at some point is if that triggers inflation due to various policies and prices go up, and that could trigger an increase of interest rates. But if you lock yourself into a 30-year loan, I'd say, you know, stay away from variables if you can, unless it's like a 10-year variable. But I would stay away from those 3 to 5 year variable programs, because that's just a recipe for disaster. That's what happened in 2008. So many people had variable loans that were able to change after 3 to 5 years. And then their interest rates quadrupled and they end up going from a, you know, $700 monthly mortgage payment to $3,500 monthly mortgage payment. And those who couldn't afford it end up having to short sell their home. So stick with you whenever you can, stick to a 30 year fixed rate, because it locks you in for 30 years. And so you know how much your monthly payment is and there's no risk involved.
Do you feel that it's realistic?
I'm sorry.
Do you feel that it's realistic with everything the way it is to get those kind of loans that last for 30 years, or, you know, people, are we going to live 30? You know what I mean? Do you think it's realistic, or do you think that's going to change where you get, maybe you come back in and redo it or something when you're in the middle of the 30 years to see if the loan still feels the same way? Is that possible, that those kind of new kind of thinking?
Absolutely.
We can't see you're frozen.
Hear me? Can you see me?
Yes.
No, even if you end up paying a little bit higher interest rate, but it does eventually go down, you can refinance it. So don't be so high interest rates. Now they're actually fairly average for short holds. If it's high, does go down, you can always refinance it and talk over at that point.
Yeah, we missed what you said. I don't know if you're moving, but if you could sit still for a minute.
Are you able to hear me?
Uh-huh. I can hear you. I think we lost you, Kevin. We lost Kevin! Because, you know, I think he was on his cell or something, and he's trying to drive or go somewhere where he's going to show a home. There he comes back now. I think we got him again. You there, Kev? So we missed what you said,
Osiris.
About, yes. Can you hear me? Hello? Okay. I'm sorry, you guys out there, but we are having some technical difficulties. I will not blame it on Mercury retrograde, but just say it has a strong influence, you know, because things like this happen all the time, especially when you're doing stuff on cell phones and you're moving and you're trying to drive, you know, and get to somewhere and wanting to have a stable conversation from a cell phone. It can be difficult because it depends on the cell sites in the area, as you know, and, you know, what's happening with those locations. So, but basically, he was saying that some of the laws, oh, here we go.
I'm back.
All right. Hey, I was trying to fill in. We didn't hear hardly any of the last part of what you said about the interest rates not going up. And I was asking you, do you think there will come a time that they will split up that time? Instead of doing one full loan for 30 years, how about every 15 years or in the 10th year, we go back, we look at the loan package, and we see if it's worth continuing for another 25, whatever years?
Well, there's so many different loan packages depending upon the lender and the broker and such. You know, there are 3-year, 5-year, 10-year, 15-year arms where at the end of that time period, it readjusts. I say stick to a 30-year fixed mortgage to be safe. If you can do that, it really locks you into that time period, and there's more stability and predictability than going with the variable. Unless you know you're going to be moving in 3 to 5 years or 10 years, it's just not worth it.
So let's just say you move into an area. You sold a person a home in a certain area. And the people say, okay, what is the population projection for this area in 10 years? What is the economy going to be like for this area? They're going to build those little shop things. They're going to build malls, strip malls. what's going to happen in the area? And then what is the diversity? How many different, what kind of landscape are we looking at in the next 10 years? Are you able to predict those kind of things when you're buying and you're selling with your clients?
Again, that's almost like timing the market or predicting. We don't have the luxury of having a crystal ball to look into. You can, if you move into an area, there might be a projection of a potential shopping mall being built, which could increase the property value. That's great, but from month to month, what if a recession hits and that gets put on hold? There's a shopping mall that was supposed to have been built at the corner of Victory and Laurel Canyon, that huge complex that was last built up in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be raised in a large community of retail and residential was supposed to be built there in 2008, 2009. It was put on hold. And to this day, it still has not been built. It's about ready to be built up now, but it could be years and years and years. My suggestion, if you're looking to move into a place to live long-term, don't worry. Don't get caught with all those questions and overthink all those things. If you like the neighborhood, if you like the home, just move there. All those other things, we have no control over. Things could happen. Mm-hmm. Things could change. It's not worth getting caught up over and into. It's easy to overthink things, and I'd say keep your life simple. Don't overthink things. If you like the home, if you like the neighborhood, if it's a good price, if you can afford it, go for it.
Yeah. You know, so those aren't some of the questions that you're saying they can't be predicted. Like, I noticed that whenever when you can pay a loan, if you're paying your mortgage every month, it'll say, oh, we notice you live in an area that's susceptible to earthquakes or something. So there is some predictability because they said you live in an area that we know that if something should happen by chance, and likely if you live long enough and stay in the same area, something's going to happen. You know, that's not predictable, but that is something you can tell people, like this area is a little bit earthquake prone, or the fault's near this area, the freeway is going to be behind you, all of that.
Well, the biggest issue now, less so than earthquakes, because we're always going to have earthquakes, but relatively few and far between, major ones at least. But what's more important now are potential fires. Now, pretty much everything in Southern California is identified as being within a high fire zone. Whether you live in the mountains or in the middle of the San Fernando Valley, you're still in a high fire zone. Because the insurance companies want to put more premiums for everybody. So they increase the premiums for everyone in the valley as well as the higher fire zone. Mm-hmm. So they can afford to pay off, you know, these claims. But fire is what we have to consider right now more than anything else, because it's harder to obtain homeowners insurance now than ever before because of the fires.
Really?
And now there's a contingency in escrow, which includes homeowner insurance. In the past, we only had three contingencies. We had the home inspection, the appraisal, and the loan. Now we have a fourth, which is the insurance contingency. So before escrow can close, the borrower has to get and secure homeowner's insurance. And the lender will not lend on a home that until it is secured. So that's something to think about. When you go into escrow, you want to get that out of the way ASAP. The first week, in the past, people would wait for the last minute and just call their insurance company and get it, and everything was fine. Now, as soon as you enter escrow, you call your insurance company and get that taken care of, because you might find that they're not willing to insure you anymore.
What about what happened? And I'm sorry, I need to ask this because I was confused about what happened. So all of those people's homes that burned in Afton and burned in Pasadena and burned in the Palisades, did they or did they not have insurance? And if they did, what happened to the insurance? Why was there a question as to if you're covered or not? Well, I don't understand.
Well, most everyone had to have insurance if they had a loan. The only time you don't need insurance when you purchase a property is if you pay for it in cash, because all lenders will require you to be covered with insurance, homeowners insurance. Now, everybody's homeowner's insurance policies are different. If you look at the fine print and see what it says, some homeowner's insurance will cover the rebuilding of the property, no matter what the costs are, and call it, you know, replacement policy. Some insurance policies only cover a fixed amount, which these days may not cover what it costs now with building materials and labor. So homeowners are finding that their insurance companies might only be paying them for maybe 3/4 of what it's going to cost them, which is terrible. So it really depends on each individual's insurance policy. So if you have an insurance policy, it always pays to look at the fine print and see what policy you have. And ideally, make sure it's one that will cover full replacement costs. So if you need to rebuild for whatever reason, you just pay the premium, the deductible, I mean, and then it covers the rest. But it's important to know, to read the fine print and know exactly where you stand with your insurance company, because you might be surprised that it may not cover as much as you thought.
Wow, that's interesting. So what if you sat there for your full 30 years, your home was fully paid off, and then all of a sudden you have a fire? Does the insurance policy still stand?
It depends on what the fine print states and what policy you have. Unless, wow. I hope so. I hope so. That'd be horrible. If you have a retired couple, if their house burned down and find out they weren't fully insured, they couldn't necessarily afford to rebuild. So they'd have to accept whatever money that the insurance company is willing to accept, walk away from it and buy something smaller in maybe a less desirable area, or just something different someplace else. But that's something that we all need to do, is look at our fine print on our insurance policy and what our policies include and are willing to cover.
So what about the provisions provided in a policy? The provisions don't say in the case of fire, forced mahur, you know, where it's out of your control. Mother Nature decided to just burn your house down. You didn't know it was going to be burned down. You're vacation somewhere in Istanbul, you know, and you come back, your stuff is gone, you know, it's burned down. Well, I mean, how can't that be a provision provided by the property, you know, the property owners or the banks or something?
Well, again, it'll be in the fine print in each insurance policy. You have to read your insurance policy thoroughly and understand what it says, what it includes, and more importantly, what it does not include. And also what I recommend is having all of your documents. Put onto a thumb drive and have that someplace else, maybe at a relative's house or somewhere else. In some case your house burns down, all of your, you'll still be able to have access to all of your documentation, your insurance forms, your maybe ID, copy of your passport ID, whatever else you might have available to you. Because think of it, how many people do that and their house burns down and they don't even know who to call because they may have forgotten who their insurance company is and what do they do?
They might have forgotten what relative they live.
Yeah, what do you do? You drive to your home and see an empty lot full of charcoal and ash and toxic chemicals, and you bought your house 20 years ago and you forgot who your insurance policy was with. Mm. Can you imagine? So it's good to have a file, even an electronic file, someplace on a thumb drive, somewhere else out of that house. So at a relative's, for instance, so you can go to the relative's, they may have that thumb drive, and then you'll have access to all of your important documentation, whether it be your living will or trust, insurance documents, copy of your driver's license, your passport, whatever the case may be. That's really important.
I would think that people would be in number one, some people don't have no relatives. And by the time your home burns down, your relatives might be dead and gone, along with your friends and everyone else. So I would think that there would be some kind of way, maybe there could be an exchange between the bank systems or whatever the security systems are at the time to hold on. They can't hold any personal property in a safety deposit box or anything.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely put it in your safe deposit box. That's also a great use of a safe deposit box. You can have a thumb drive in there, someplace safe. And that's an excellent idea, too.
Kevin, you're gone again. He's gone again. I wonder why the whole camera is going off like that. I don't know why. I'm sorry, people out there, again, I'm dealing with something beyond my control. I guess it's the outer limits or something has taken over the screen that we are still trying to have a conversation with Kevin.
I'm out.
Okay, hi. So anyway, yeah, that would be a good idea. Or I think that as, or my feeling is that as we move further into technology and AI, perhaps the clouds and things like that would be able to handle personal information in a way that we all feel safe for it to be.
I would save your information in a few different places, formats. iCloud, thumb drive in your safe deposit box, a relative. That way, if something happens, what happens if your house burns down in the Palisades, for instance, in your bank next door with your safe deposit box burns down also? What do you, you know, it's good to have multiple, diversify, like you're diversifying with your finances, diversify with your information, have it in a few different places, and relatives, a safe deposit box, iCloud. So at least, you know, it's safe and it's some place where you have access to it in case something happens.
Yeah, and as far as I understand, though, those big metal that people used to have back in the day, they don't burn in a fire. They do not burn.
They don't burn.
They get charred, but they don't burn.
Okay, well, let's hope that's the case.
Yeah, a lot of the safety deposits box, the materials they're made out of, they don't burn. They're okay. Not burnable. I've never seen anybody say their safety deposit box burned. Or that their metal box burned.
I don't know. I remember there was a Citibank office in Van Nuys that burnt down a couple of years ago.
Really?
And I drove by it after it was burnt down, and there was nothing left. I swear to God, it was dirt. Literally, it was dirt. I don't know. Maybe it was so hot that it just melted all the metal. I don't know.
They might have come in. By the time you saw it, they might have come in and confiscated anything that might have money or something like that.
That's a possibility that I drove by the next day. It's always a possibility. But it's never. It's always good to err on the side of caution and just still have it in
a safe place.
A couple of different locations, just in case. That what he said is probably true. I would think that would be true, but why? Why take a chance? Why not have it in another place as well?
I don't know. My grandmother used to keep all her stuff under the mattress. So
until the mattress burns, that's a great idea. But, you know.
Her home never burned, but I'm just saying that was her big safe. And then if it wasn't under the mattress, she put it in a sock and put it inside her bra.
Okay, Lord.
Like the older guys used to put it in the side of their socks. You know, they put their important stuff. I thought it was so funny.
Until they wash their socks and realize all
the documentation. They forgot that the stuff was in there. And then I wanted to ask a question about HOAs, property owners, landlords, tenants. Like in our building, we have, I think it's 15 units. Two are apartments.
And then the rest out.
Condos. So how does that affect if there's any kind of interchange in law and regulation as to what they're asking and requiring of the owners of the property where people rent or buy, or they're asking the property owners or the renters themselves?
Well, every HOA is different. Every HOA, every community has different bylaws and CC&Rs. So it really depends upon what is in their governing documents. That's why when you purchase a condominium or a townhouse, you need to go through with your realtor the CC&Rs and all the paperwork to make sure that, for instance, it's a rentable unit. Sometimes an investor will buy a condo thinking they'll rent it out, and then close the escrow. They realize somebody tells them that in this one HOA, rentals are not allowed, or there are only a certain amount of rentals that are allowed, and it's currently maximized already. It's already at its limit, so you won't be able to rent it out. So the time to find that out is before close of escrow. While you're in escrow, you find out what your limitations are, depending on what your needs are. If you're looking to rent it out, make sure it's a rentable unit. As far as condos, you know, everyone has HOA dues. They really range from from, they range from, you know, $200-$300 a month to $1,500-$2,000 a month. It depends where it is. If it's a high rise, if it's a low rise, if they're, you know, what amenities are included. It really, they fluctuate greatly. It depends upon the community.
Wow.
But you need a realtor who understands HOAs and understands what to look out for and what needs to be verified prior to close of escrow so you don't get screwed as a buyer.
Now, you are a certified senior real estate and probate specialist. Correct. So you were saying before we got on live that seniors especially have to be protected because you get old, you forget how to do, then you got technology, then you got AI, and you got all these new things coming up. They're trying to figure out how to turn the computer on, find the file that they forgot about, where they left the information in the first place, and things like that. And we, I would say that we are people that are over 60, over 50 in some cases, are under attack. It's so many scams, fraudulent things.
There's so many scammers.
How can people more better protect themselves? The selves of the many. How do we protect those selves when the screen keeps going on and off and the scammers are lost in in oblivion?
The main thing is there are so many scammers and they like going after the elderly because they're easy targets. And many elderly people aren't even on the computers. So people call them. The other day, for instance, I received a call from somebody who said they are with a DWP and that they're going out to turn off my electricity or my water because I had a packed back overdue bill of like $950. I knew I didn't, but he sounded so official. He trusted me to somebody else who also sounded very official. And luckily I knew better than to send them $950 through Zelle. So I hung up and called. I hung up and called DWP. So if somebody calls you, hang up and call DWP back or whatever organization it is. If it's from the IRS, DWP, the gas company, if you aren't sure, always err on the side of caution. Say, well, thank you very much. I'll call you back. Hang up on them immediately. And if you're concerned, call that company, DWP, the gas company, the IRS. And when you call them, you know you're getting the real thing because you're calling them, right? And then they'll tell you what the current status is, if you owe money or if you don't owe money. But never send money to anybody requesting money on the telephone without verifying it first, because there are so many scammers. People are getting scammed every day to the tune of thousands of dollars needlessly.
It's really sad that people are getting scammed.
Always,
and that
be
people
careful.
Don't understand enough about scamming. You know what you're not supposed to.
I'm sorry, are you there? Did I lose you?
You know, no. You can you hear me? Can you hear me, Kevin? Can you hear? Okay, I think he lost.
Osiris?
Me. Yes. Hello. Okay. Can you hear us?
Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear? So, as you can see, we are having technical difficulties. Out of our control is the outer limits. They have taken over control of the screen in our case. It's LA Talk Radio.
Stuff is back. Yes. Yeah. Did you hear me? Were you able to hear what I said?
Yes, we were able to hear. But what I wanted to ask you were on the tail end of explaining that when it comes to scamming and all, first of all, I almost got scammed. I was so ignorant of what they were asking me to do that they got impatient with me and lost the desire to scam me. I'm like, what do you mean turn on the thing? I don't know where that is. And the guy was like, lady. And then when he said lady, that's what made me know it was a scam.
They're always the red flags, always red flags.
People, customer service people would never, they don't do that. They don't relax and go into some personal kind of conversation. They'll keep talking to you the 30 minute. And then when I did call the bank, they said, number one, everyone to tell everyone out there, they don't call you.
Never,
unless they
never
said, and you agreed, oh, you're going to call me back at 1 o'clock on Tuesday because we had a conversation. We didn't resolve the issue. None of these people call you. They don't call you. They don't text you unless you agree that they should do so. So that's the first thing you should consider. But a lot of elderly people aren't even on, like you said, they're not even on the computer. They're not even aware that we're having this kind of conversation today.
And they're susceptible because it's easy for them to say, oh, I owe you money. Okay, well, let me send it to you. And the best thing is don't send any money to anybody on the telephone. Just make it a policy. Do not send money to anybody requesting money from the telephone. If you're unsure whether you owe a balance, kindly say thank you very much, hang up on them, and call that company to find out what you actually owe. It's very easy. If you're on the phone, you have total control. You can hang up at any time. Don't give them the power to convince, you know, send the money.
Well, they pull on your heartstrings. I remember when I worked for ACLU, and ACLU is all sales. They put a screen in front of you, and then they give you a script, and you have to read the script, and poor the little 90-year-old lady, hi, and they play on their emotions. Who are you with? The fire department. Oh, yeah, you know, those fires in the Pacific Palisades. I feel so sorry for all those poor people. Sweetie, can you hold on while I get my wallet and give you my information? And then there you go. They're in a scam. So a lot of them is emotional. And if you're a good salesperson, you can pretty much talk people into anything if you really know how to sell. I'm serious.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It is amazing what you can
talk. I was almost ready to pay him them the $950 myself. I was shocked because they sound so authentic and so convincing until I realized, oh, wait, DWP never calls people. This has to be a scam. So I hung up
and
I called
them. Did you remember owing them $900 and something the last time you looked at your bill? No. You didn't owe them $900 something?
I called them back. I owed them $35. That was my current balance. So never pay money on via Zelle or Venmo to anybody on the phone because 9 out of 10 times it'll be a scam.
Well, what about in terms of, now let's just say I'm 90 years old and my husband, who was 92, dear Lloyd, he died a week or so ago and I'm left all alone. I'm sad. I'm lonely. And I'm 92 and I'm 90 years old. And what do I do? Who do I call? And my nieces and nephews, they don't want to be bothered with me. And my grandkids live in Australia, you know, with their parents. What do you suggest that, how do they call a reputable real estate agent, a property, and have them walk them through some of the legalities that changes when a spouse dies with property?
Sure. Well, if you have any questions about a trust, whether they even have a trust, they can always give me a call. I can walk through it with them on the phone or in person, wherever they choose, to see where they stand now and what is important to them based upon what their needs are and what they want to do. It's amazing how many people don't have trusts set up. And if you own real property, that's so important. I just sold a property in LA that was in probate. And the owner of the property refused to get a trust. Her relatives insisted that she have a trust set up, so when she does pass, it wouldn't have to go through probate. So the rule is, if you pass away and you have real property, or if your estate's worth over a certain amount of money, and you do not have a trust, guess what? It automatically goes into probate. And probate
what does
these
that
days,
mean?
Probate is a court action where your whole estate has to be settled through the courts. And the attorney will take like $20,000 to $50,000 off the top for the service they provide. And it's very time consuming. It takes at least 1 year to go through probate. So your heirs, it's horrible for your heirs because they have to go through that process, which is time consuming. It's tiring. It's expensive. They have to put the bill at the beginning out of their own pocket. And it's selfish for those who have the means. It's not terribly expensive to set up a trust, but it's selfish to put your heirs in that position of having to go through probate when they don't. Once you set up a trust with a living will, then once you pass away, your property automatically goes to your heirs without ever going to probate.
Okay.
So it's highly desirable. If any of your viewers aren't sure about what probate is or if they have a trust, have them give me a call. Let me sit down with them and go through it to see whether or not they have a trust. And if so, if it's properly executed, if their property is in the trust, the property has to be in the trust for it to be safeguard to avoid probate. It's very, very important.
And then we're running out of time, and I want you to give us your social media tags. Of course, we run the ad, Kevin Pike, Senior Probate and Real Estate Specialist, 818-571-1508, Coldwell Banker. Kevin, you can shout it out yourself as well. Right about now, let's hear it.
Call me, 818-571-1508. Or if you're living in the 213 area code, if you're West LA, Beverly Hills, Brentwood, you can call me at 323-571-8500.
213-571-8500 is another number we can reach you at. Yes. 213-571-8500 is the number.
Let me give you that.
571-1508. He's going to look right now.
Actually, no. Forget 8500.
Okay.
It's 323-571. I mean, wait. Yes, that's right. 323-571-7580. I'm dyslexic. Forgive me.
323-571-7580. I have to work on memory. I have the same problem.
But we all do. I know, right?
I have to work on it. I do things to help. Yeah.
Or again, in the Valley or West LA, anywhere else, you can still call me at 818-571-1508.
And
I cover clients all the way from the beach to Palm Springs and from Lancaster all the way down to Laguna Beach. I have a pretty large area of clientele. So if you're within that area and have questions, feel free to give me a call.
You know, there's
no obligation for me to give you a valuation of your home, how much your home is worth, what your goals are, what you'd like to do, whether you're looking to downsize or upsize or move out of state, out of the country. I can help you with that. Answer your questions about probate, listing, about any legal issues, about the latest, you know, real estate forms that are required. There's so much
involved
information and so many details that are important to understand before you go into the transaction, before you list with any potential agent as a buyer or as a seller.
Okay, well, listen, we're short on time. We got to go. I got to do my thing. Let's thank our... I actually had our sponsor on the show. I thought that was so cool. And Kevin, you're just adorable. Isn't he lovable? Such a good guy. Not just adorable, good inside and out. I mean that. I've known him for a long time, and he's been nothing but always the same person. Never have to worry about him go changing on you or doing something different. We really appreciate you coming on. Again, his social media tags are Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508, across the board. Facebook, I'm sure he's on Instagram, all of the other platforms. For me, I like you. I forgot to tell you that last week.
And my website also is kevinpikeforhomeless.com. Kevin Pike for homeless.com, the number four. Kevin Pike, P-I-K-E, the number four, homes.com.
Okay.
You can look at my website. You can read some testimonials. You can learn more information about myself on my website. Again, Kevin Pike, the number four, homes.com.
There you go. Kevin Pike, number four, homes.com. And for me, I love you. Thank you for hanging with us, putting up with all the little difficulties that we have at times while we make our way and shine even more. Thanks to, and I love you for being brave and courageous and living your lives despite all the changes that are going on the planet. All over the world, there is no escape. There is change all over the planet. So we might as well buckle up, get used to it, and see what we can do to handle this stuff. Okay, and we'll see you next week. Don't forget to smile It works wonders, and I'll see you next time. Bye. Bye, Kevin.
Thanks for having me on, Miss Iris. Thank you for having me on.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.